Okay, let me first take the opportunity to thank the organizers for letting me speak in this conference. I'm very pleased. Thank you. My talk will be about the Boltzmann equation, and so this is a joint. Different parts of this are joint work with Cedric Villani from Lyon, Irene Gamba from Austin, Texas, and Sasha Bobole from Karlstad, Sweden. The basic result I'll be speaking about is the following. So let me start by formulating, and the thing is really formulated very easily. Suppose that we have a solution of the spatially homogeneous Boltzmann equation. I will explain what it means, satisfying the initial condition and such that the initial data is non-negative and is bounded pointwise by a Maxwellian. And suppose that we take a solution that preserves energy, then a solution is pointwise bounded by a Maxwellian for all later times. Okay? So the result, this result is very simply formulated, and I will go on to explain why we were interested in it and what are the implications. Okay, but first let me, since I'm the first speaker here about, talking about the Boltzmann equation, let me take a few slides to introduce the Boltzmann equation and speak about it in very general. So when we say Boltzmann equation, we normally mean something like this, what we have in the frame. So in the left we have the transport term, in the right we have collision operator, which is typically a nonlinear integral operator, pretty complicated. It will appear in a couple of subsequent slides. So the problem describes the evolution of one particle mass density. So it describes a single particle in a rarefied gas. So the classical model is like this. This unknown f depends on the molecular velocity v, which is three-dimensional vector, on time, and on x, which is say in some domain. And well, we should have some sort of boundary conditions on the boundary. So typically for every x here, if you pick a point, so the distribution f would look something like this. So I pulled it here, Maxwellian. It doesn't have to be, but well. We expect something of this sort. So the meaningful quantities that one defines in this context are density, bulk velocity, so the average velocity of particles, and their internal energy. And so this k here is physical constant, the Boltzmann constant, and T is the temperature. Okay. So these quantities are computed as integrals of the unknown functions, and typically when we speak about the Boltzmann equation, we normally are interested in integral quantities. And so it's typically a lot more work to find something about solutions of the Boltzmann equation pointwise. So the collision operator Q, which will appear in a few minutes, satisfies formally the following conservation relations. So integrating with respect to velocity, we get zero, which expresses the conservation of mass. Integrating with the weight factor of V gives you conservation of momentum. Integrating with the factor of V squared gives you conservation of energy. I say formally because for example, the Perner-Lyon solutions of the Boltzmann equation, which are the only ones to be known to exist globally for general sort of initial data, the first of the quantities is okay. The other one are somewhat questionable. You'll probably hear more about this in the next talk of in one of the talks in the afternoon by Nader Masmoudi. So if f is close to local equilibrium, and local equilibrium so means that the collision term vanishes, and the collision term vanishes on functions of this sort, which are exponentials to minus v squared essentially. So if f is in a certain sense close to local equilibrium, very roughly, we get equations of hydrodynamics, and so depending on scaling, we can extract Euler equations or Navier-Stokes equation. And again, I will let other speakers to present that. Okay? So in my next slide, I will discard all this hydrodynamic background of the Boltzmann equation, and I will speak just about the collision term. Okay, which is the simplest framework in which you can work in. So suppose that we drop the x dependence, then the transport term becomes just the time derivative. Okay, and well, without loss of generality because of the conservation of the quantities that I mentioned, we can assume that solution conserves mass, momentum, and energy. And well, I just take this sort of constants here for convenience to make things simpler. So the collision operator that appears in the Boltzmann equation. So what we need to know about it is that it's the difference of two things. It's a gain term minus loss term. So both of them are non-negative quantities, and that's going to be used. So the loss term is the simpler of the two, and the meaning is that it measures. So if you look at a particle that travels with a given velocity, it measures how often it happens that these particles change their velocities. And this process is simple to quantify. So if you write q minus of fh, the bilinear form, is the product of h times certain convolution type expression where you integrate f. Okay? So q plus, the gain term, is more complicated. And before I introduce it, let me give you a picture of so what happens with particles in a rarefied gas. So again, in the simplest case, you think of particles as hard balls. I will use the notations v and v star for velocities of them before they collide, and v prime and v star prime for velocities after they collide. Okay? And well, what we need to know is, to specify the collision outcome, we need to know the velocities of the particles, so this v and v star. And instead of them, it's sometimes more convenient to take velocity of the center of mass and relative velocity. Okay, so this half sum and the difference between the two. And well, you need to know somewhere else, because particles may collide head on. They may collide in a way that they barely touch each other. So there are some other parameters involved. And this can be expressed by specifying, for example, the direction of the new relative velocity. So, one can pass to the center of mass coordinates and say that the collision occurs so that we have a point particle with the velocity equals the relative velocity, then it reflects, and so this is how it works. And so the direction of this vector defines the collision precisely. Okay, and so with this in mind, it's easy to understand what the gain term of the equation will look like. So it takes two particles to produce a particle with a new velocity. So we will have this product of f times of f of one velocity times f of another velocity. Okay, so there will be a certain function which characterizes how often these collisions happen. And well, so for the model of hard spheres or hard balls, which I will be talking about today, so this function is proportional to the absolute value of the relative velocity. Okay, and so this factor in the equation is important because, for one thing, it makes the things more complicated. Well, it's physically reasonable. It makes the things more complicated because some of your operators go unbounded. And it also makes some of the things work the way they are. Okay, but well, the analysis is by no means bound, by no means restricted to the hard sphere case. But I will just take it for simplicity in this talk. Okay, and well, yes. This doesn't occur here, because for hard for hard spheres interactions, everything is cutoff. And this is the main motivation for introducing cutoffs in the first place, because you have one physical model of a Billard with n particles that you can somehow use as a model for the Boltzmann equation, and for this you don't need the cutoff. For this you don't have singularity for grazing collisions. As soon as you delocalize your interactions, as soon as you allow your particles to interact at a distance, you will get that the total collision cross section will diverge. But again, so I will be not concerned with this in this talk. And well, the main justification for doing the cutoff is because for hard spheres you have cutoff naturally. Okay. Yeah, and so as I said, the velocities before the collision or after a collision, it actually doesn't matter in this context. They are given if you specify the velocity of the center of mass U, capital U, the relative velocity little u, and the sigma which is unit vector in the direction of the new relative velocity, and it also appears here when we integrate. Okay. Yeah, and so immediately notice that if we change sigma to minus sigma, then everything is symmetric. And I will use this very this is one of the tricks that we need to use. Okay, so this is the geometric picture in the velocity space of how the things occur. So suppose that we have one velocity, two velocities fixed before the collision, then the velocities after collision are specified like this. So these are the formulas, and what they actually mean is that we have this fixed center, and then we have a sphere of a radius half the relative velocity on which the collision outcomes may occur. Okay, and so this sort of geometry also enters the collision term that I showed you on the previous slide. Okay, and so this is the sigma vector, and well, we can assume that the angle between this vector and the relative velocity is at most pi over 2. So why is that? Because if it's not, in this situation it's less than pi over 2, it's this angle. If it's not, we can just exchange sigma with minus sigma using the previous symmetry and get to the situation where this angle is less than pi over 2. Okay? So there is some sort of symmetry going on here. And I will use this for defining Q plus. For the Q plus, I will define the bilinear form of Q plus in which I only take cosine theta positive. But then you have to multiply by 2 and modify your function in the equation. Okay, so here is a summary of results about the spatially homogeneous Boltzmann equation. It's a very well known, very well studied topic. So the classical result goes to the beginning of 70s by Arkerid, who proved that if you assume that your solution has finite mass, finite energy, which is the integral of F times V square, and well, actually some additional conditions, then you have solution that is that exists in this space, differentiable with respect to time, and so the equation is defined in a decent meaning. And so a recent improvement of this result belongs to Michler and Svenberg in 1999, who proved that it's enough to take finite mass and finite energy, basically to have the solution exist. So it also very well known, and actually that's the first result about the Boltzmann equation. The first rigorous result about the Boltzmann equation, it goes back to Carleman in 1933, who proved that the problem is well posed in L infinity space with a weight. So if you take functions that are decreasing as inverse polynomials, then this property is true for the time evolution. You lose something in the exponent of the polynomial, but you have the same basic decay. Okay. So another interesting property here is that if you start with anything or with something with positive mass, then it immediately gains a lower bound by Maxwellian. So at any positive time, your solution will be bounded below by Maxwellian. So this is an indication that solutions take roughly Maxwellian shape after a short time. And yeah, of course, I didn't mention that it's also proven that solutions of the space homogeneous Boltzmann equation converge to Maxwellians, which is a consequence of Boltzmann's H theorem. And that's also been proved rigorously for this case a long time ago. Okay, so some nice properties of the moments of the Boltzmann equation are also known. If you multiply by v to the 2p with some p greater than 1, so a moment higher than energy, then you immediately gain moments of all orders. So this is a result due to Diviette in 93, which was improved subsequently, but it's enough for us. So a result by Bobolev obtained in 97 says that if you have exponential moments or this inverse Maxwellian moments of solutions, then this property propagates in time. Then there is another constant in the Maxwellian for which the solution is bounded in this way. Okay, so the bounds were proved for the integrals, but it remains an open problem whether they hold pointwise. And this is our theorem, which we're the result that we are preparing with Rick Villani, that if the solution is bounded pointwise, it's bounded like this for all times. Okay, so let me explain some tools that you need to get a result like this. And well, I present them again in a very simple and crude form. So this is what I call the maximum principle for the Boltzmann equation, which is a little bit flaky, but I'll explain more about it. So let's look at this linear type of Boltzmann equation. So let's think of f as fixed function, and let's look at this as an equation for the function g. Okay, then it's very easy to prove that if you start with non-negative initial data, then this property will propagate. And the proof is immediate here. So if you assume that your solution touches zero somewhere, then your loss term must be zero because it's proportional to g. Okay, and if you assume that g is zero, it's zero, and the gain term is still positive or non-negative. So if you assume inequality like this, then the equation must satisfy the maximum principle. There is nothing fancy about this. Corollary, which is a little bit more interesting, is the following. Suppose that we can find a function that satisfies this sort of inequality, where f is generally a time-dependent function, and so we will take it as a solution of the true Boltzmann equation. Suppose that we can find a super solution like this that satisfies this inequality, and f is a solution of this nonlinear equation, then if f is below h at time t equals 0, then f will remain below h for all times. Okay? So that's an abstract statement. The flaw is that we don't really have a single function that satisfies this inequality. And actually, it's not hard to see that it cannot be satisfied for all in all the space, because well, this function integrates zero, and it should be negative somewhere. However, let's try to use this anyhow and see if we can find some good information from this. So let's try with super solutions Maxwellians. So this is the basic example that appears in this theorem. So the whole work on this was motivated by equations of granular media, in which the steady states are not Maxwellians, but functions of a different shape. So for other situations, it's useful to try with something more general, like e to the minus alpha v to the s. And this is the key to getting results for granular media, which I will mention in the end of the talk. Okay? Yeah, and so, well, if you take h independent of time, what we basically need to prove is that q plus of fh is below q minus of h of fh. And let's see if we can get this inequality. This is easy, but not completely trivial. So what we need to know, so we want to estimate loss term in some reasonable way, and as I said, it's not very hard. So it's proportional to h, and the proportionality factor here depends on it grows linearly when b increases if you take this model of hard spheres. Okay, for other models we will have some other sort of behavior, but typically if the collision rate grows for large v, we would have something growing. So let's try to estimate q plus, and what we want to see is that q plus of fh over h is smaller than v for v large. And so then if we prove this, so if you prove that q plus is below q minus for v large, well, we have the result that if solution is bounded initially, then it remains bounded for all time. This polynomial type of estimate that I showed in one of the slides. So for the rest of the velocity space, we can use those results to get bounds. Okay. And let me show how to get this estimate for large v, which is really the essence of what we did. So for this you need to the difficult part here is that the collision operator is especially the gain part of the collision operator is somewhat difficult to work with. If you try to substitute any reasonable function, then you don't go too far. So what helps here is that you can represent the collision geometry in some different variables. And so the variables that we're using here are, they were introduced by Carlemann in the 30s. And, well, instead of taking this picture of the collision geometry that I showed, so instead of fixing V and V, this should be V star, instead of fixing this and looking at the outcomes on the sphere, we can take V and, let's say, V star prime, one of the post-collisional velocities. And, well, then the geometry here is that the velocities build a rectangle, so the outcomes of the collisions in this case will fall on this plane that I call EZ, which is perpendicular to V minus V star prime. Okay? And, well, if we are patient and if you do the change of variables in the collision operator, we end up with something like this. So integral of f of v star prime, certain weight, which we can deal with, and, well, the other function integrated over this ez over the plane, which appears here. And, well, important, one important point here is that because of the collision symmetry that I used in the beginning, so remember I said that I want the collision angle to be between between 0 and pi over 2. So if you use this, then V minus V prime here is less in the absolute value than V minus V star prime. Okay, so there is a certain truncation that we can put in it, which is convenient. And then we can find the following simple bound for the linear gain operator. So the bound says that the gain operator, if you plug in F and Maxwellian, and if F satisfies this sort of bound if f is integrable with inverse Maxwellian. Okay, so this sort of expression appearing here. Then q plus is pointwise below Maxwellian. Okay, and so this is how we prove it. Suppose that we have this estimate for the exponential moment of this sort. So then we can write q plus in the Carleman form. And again, it's a bit hard to see what's going on here. So, but if you write everything carefully, we end up with integral of f. We can separate this exponential weight and write the kernel that remains. And I wrote it here. So it's basically an integral operator. And so the miracle here is that this kernel, which is generally not so easy to deal with, simplifies because of the energy conservation. So the expression that appears in the kernel will be minus alpha v star square. Okay? And so also because of the truncation that we used, so v minus v prime is less than v minus v star prime, so this makes things easier. So this is basically how the estimate works. Let me show this. So we take the kernel, which is integral over plane of e to the minus alpha v star square with a truncation. The truncation means that this is a picture. So this is the original plane that we would integrate. So this condition means that we integrate over the inside part of the circle. So if we go to this v star, it's one can see that it will be the same sort of shape in the space, the same sort of circle but shifted. Okay? And well, so the integral, so this function is integrable over all of the space. So if you take integral over planes, that works. And so this factor can be killed by the fact that this is a circle. So if v minus v star prime is small, you get a factor of square because of the circle, and it kills the factor in front of the integral. Okay, so this is basically how it works. So what I proved is that q plus is pointwise below Maxwellian if we assume the exponential bound. And so remember, the exponential bounds were known previously by some results in this for the spatially homogeneous Boltzmann equation. So that gives you the result. So in the remaining time that I have, let me speak about inelastic collisions. Yes? Well, it can be extended. Well, so for hard spheres, there is a kernel which is 1 over 4 pi v minus v star to the absolute value. So you can extend it to something like this, v minus v star to the gamma negative v of cosine theta. And b is an integrable function that satisfies certain conditions. So for hard potentials with grad cutoff, you can prove this. You may relax this condition in gamma a little bit, but this is not finished yet. Yeah, so this is hard potentials. Hard potentials grad cutoff. But well, basically philosophically, if it works for hard spheres, it should work for hard potentials with cutoff. Whether it works for potentials without cutoff is a different question. And so the results that I showed on the slides for existence and uniqueness and bounds, they are all specific to this sort of kernels for hard potentials with grad cutoff. Without them, you don't really, you're not able to say that much. Let me find the slide that I was going to. Yeah, so here is the one. Okay, so here is a little bit different model. So instead of looking at elastic collisions of hard balls, I will be looking at, still hard balls, but which collide inelastically. And this is a basic model for dilute granular flow. And dilute granular flow means that, there are particles which are, there are many of them, and they're microscopic size. And so they behave roughly as a gas. So this happens, for example, if you take a container with some granular particles and shake it. So if particles are flying, you can use the models of kinetic theory, and sometimes they give results that are surprisingly close to what is actually observed. Okay, so this is that is right. That was one of the works when this concept appeared as well. There are many different systems that involve inelastic collisions, and that so we're interested in Boltzmann equations for such systems. Okay, so think of collisions of hard balls in which momentum is preserved but energy is dissipated. And the basic law that I take, I will introduce what I call normal restitution coefficient, call it alpha here. Normal restitution coefficient means that when the particles collide, so the tangential component of the relative velocity remains the same, but the normal component of the relative velocity, which would change sign in the elastic collision, changes sign with some coefficient that is less than one. So a certain part of the normal velocity is lost. So this gives you a loss of energy in the collision. That's a geometric picture that you get in the velocity space for this sort of collisions. It's somewhat more complicated. So this solid line, the circle is what you get in the elastic case. In the inelastic case, when your particles collide according to this law, the outcomes of collisions will fall inside the sphere. And so, the V prime, one of the velocities, will live on this sphere. The star prime will live on a sphere of the same radius, but which is shifted a bit. Okay, and you can also write formulas for V star and V star prime, which can be seen as generalizations of what I said before. And for this sort of problems, I will just formulate the result. And this is actually a part of the work. So if you're interested about more details about granular media, I will be giving a talk tomorrow in Applied Math Seminar in the University of Toronto, so you're welcome to attend that. So one of the models that we've been looking at is the models of inelastic collisions in a heat bath. And what you have in the simple case, you have collision term. I put Q beta here to indicate that it models inelastic collisions. So beta is a certain coefficient that appeared there. So the particles are in heat bath, which means that between collisions they perform some sort of Brownian motion. And that's a model that appeared in the physical literature. So it was studied by Van Nooy and Ernst, 98, and a group of Harry Sweeney in Texas in 99, and some later works as well. So what we were able to prove for this model is the following. I will give the summary of the results. In a paper with Cedric Villani and Irene Gamba, which is to appear this year in CMP, we proved that the problem. Well, first of all, we proved that the problem is well posed if you take data in L1 intersection with L2 and assume some moment conditions. And so for uniqueness, you need a slightly stronger moment condition, but it's basically not very restrictive. So your solutions become immediately smooth. So you gain Schwarz class regularity, which is attributed to the presence of this term in the equation. For the Boltzmann equation, you don't really, with the cutoff, you don't have any regularizing properties. So steady solutions of this equation satisfy the bound, and that's an interesting part. So we proved that steady solution satisfies the lower bound e to the beta v to the 3/2. And so I'm sorry, this beta is not really the same as this beta. So it's just a different constant. And well, for the time dependent case, we can prove the time dependent bounds with constants that deteriorate in time exponentially, but are still the same shape. Okay, and so this was actually one of the reasons why physicists were interested in this, because they refer to this as abnormal behavior of tails of velocity distributions, and this was the motivation of the whole activity that we performed. So it was much harder to prove the upper bound for this equation, and so what we managed to prove with Sasha Bobolev and Irene Gamba was the extension of Sasha's result for the elastic Boltzmann equation, which was actually surprisingly non-trivial, so compared to his previous work. So we proved that so if you multiply by this inverse of the steady distribution, or if you take the exponential moment with v to the 3/2, then the thing is finite. And it's, well, because of the lower bound, it actually, well, it tells you that in the integral sense, in a certain integral sense, the solutions behave as e to the minus v to the 3/2. And well, using the techniques that I showed you earlier in my talk, we proved the following. So if f is less than a constant times e to the minus v to the 3/2, with some constants, then the same property holds uniformly in time, and the steady solution satisfies this pointwise bound. Okay, and so this brings me to conclusions. Yes? No, but this is precisely that we proved that the solution remains sandwiched between two e to the minus 3/2 functions.
Suppose it's covered compacted supported.
Right.
It immediately spreads out to 3/2.
Well, this we didn't prove, but this I believe is true. Well, actually, no. Q is actually much. Q is more complicated. And what happens here? You have so when you have steady state for this sort of equation, or let me not write time derivatives. So when you have the steady state for this equation.
Steady state is different.
Okay. Well. No, but yeah. Let me say anyway. So this is Q plus f, which is well something, minus f convolution with v times f. And so in the case, so when you have steady state, this behaves as a linear function for v large. And if you match this term with this term for v large, you get precisely e to the minus v 3/2 asymptotics. So it's somehow natural. So unless you have some sort of cancellation in the Q term, you you would not expect any other behavior. So, but again, so the problem for the time evolution could be more tricky. Okay, so I have 1 minute to go over the conclusion. So we obtained the pointwise upper bound by Maxwellians. So for granular media we proved the three houses in totics. So there is one point that is interesting here. So solutions bounded by Maxwellians are, well, they were really a hot topic some very long time ago. So people were trying to prove that solutions for the full Boltzmann equation are bounded pointless by Maxwellians, and they failed. And actually, it was believed to be a hard problem, since nobody was able to prove this for the space homogeneous case either. So this the story is that, for example, Lanford's argument for rigorous validation of the Boltzmann equation, the classical argument. So it uses bounds by Maxwellians, and so by the standard argument, by the expansions in the series that Lanford uses, you get this bounds in a very short time, which is supposed to be a fraction of the mean time between collisions of particles. So the fact that solutions remain bounded by Maxwellians for all time is, well, that this can be proved with constant independent of time is somewhat a surprise. I should also say that if we for the space inhomogeneous Boltzmann equation, it's of course much more difficult to get any sort of information about moments and well, the story is that if you have boundedness of hydrodynamic quantities, then you can prove that your solution of the Boltzmann equation stays bounded. And what we can prove in this case is that if you also have somehow exponential bounds for the moments for the spatially inhomogeneous case, then you also recover pointwise bounds by Maxwellians, which will not be uniform in time, or at least we are not able to say that, but will remain Maxwellians for all times, with a constant that grows exponentially in time. And so this is basically all I have to say. So it's nice that it works for more general collision mechanisms such as granular interactions, and gives some interesting results there. Okay, so this is all I have to say today.
That the macroscopic quantity are controlled one way or the other, then you can have your result.
Yeah.
Now the other thing, I think there are many people which are not of the Boltzmann gang here. So maybe can you say in few words what is the main obstruction for going from the homogeneous case to the inhomogeneous?
So the Boltzmann, the main difficulty of the Boltzmann equation, if you wish, is the main obstruction is how to couple the transport term with the collision term, because they live in separate universes in a way. If you try to write moment equations. For example, in the very first step here, we assumed that the hydrodynamic quantities were constants, which is for free in a space homogeneous in a space homogeneous case. But here you need to work a lot to get something like this. Yes. That's right. Probably can be improved. The bound that we have, it deteriorates with time. So you have this e to the minus constant times t factor in front of the bound. Well, perhaps with some more sophisticated analysis, you could probably improve this to. That's right. You would expect that, but you need more arguments to do this.